This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek show number 681 with guest Mike Wieger, recorded on June 18th, 2026. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all through the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Mike, it's College World Series week-ish, whatever that thing is. Typically, what kind of weather do we get during the College World Series?
They're shipping people into the CenturyLink or whatever it used to be, because we're having tornado warnings and it's storming or it's blazing hot and just like unbearable, and it's been the opposite.
It has been the greatest week. Like, if you're not in Omaha this week watching the College World Series. Now, I have some people who go, what's the College World Series? It's baseball, right? College baseball. Here, Omaha has hosted it for 75 years or something crazy like that. And it's quite, for the city, you know, or a million here in the metro-ish, if you count the dogs and cats walking by. It's a pretty big deal. You're way out west. Do you even feel it out there in West Omaha? Do you get any kind of feel that's going on?
You feel it if you go to the restaurants, because I feel like a lot of people are staying in hotels West Omaha, even because it's gotten so big. And then you also notice that because it's not just College World Series, Omaha decides all the youth baseball also hosts tournaments in Omaha. So that way all the youth teams can play their tournament, then go watch the big boys play. So we get a lot of young families traveling in for youth baseball out west, just because we have a lot of the fields out here. So we see more of the families come in for that.
Yeah. Well, beautiful weather this weekend was nice. It's going to get a little warm, and then a front came through. It's gorgeous out there right now. This is one of those things of like, hey, College World Series fans, you're welcome, you know, because it's never like this. Well, anyways, big thanks to our Patreon subscribers as well, for those folks that are joining me every month on Patreon. Thanks for doing that. I appreciate you guys. If you want to join that team, head out to theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And I got just one $5 plan if you want to join the network, and appreciate your help in doing that. Then if you want to use the Amazon affiliate link. Now, I need a little help with this because I've been trying to work, Mike. We're going to talk AI here in just a second. Don't leave. Just because I said AI, don't leave. I know you want to. Oh, my God, not again. Yes, again, but stay around. I've been trying to get the API for the Amazon affiliate program to work where I can connect to it and it gives me data. And to do that, you got to reach the certain like sales level kind of thing, right? Where they're like, oh, we want to see enough traffic. For whatever reason, I don't have enough traffic. So I'm going to plead to you guys tonight. Head over, if you're going to buy, something on Amazon anyways, right? Go over theaverageguy.tv. There's a link in the upper right-hand corner for the affiliate. Just click through. That's all you got to do. Just click through. I just got to get to that point where the API is working, and then you can stop. I don't know why you'd want to, but you could. So if you're listening to this over the next week or two, and you're going to buy something on Amazon, click this site. It'll help me get that API access that I've been looking for. You'll find out why a little bit later in the show, maybe why that's important, but appreciate you guys using that link. And then one more thing, you know, I've been talking a lot of AI. Mike's got a story on this as well. Started with OpenClaw and then have been using Hermes. I thought, you know, it'd be a great idea, Mike, is I've collected all of this story on ChatGPT because I've been using ChatGPT to help me build these things, right? It's got pages and pages and pages of the story already written. So I thought, why don't I just sit down and have it help me reconstruct the history of this, you know, the last, I don't know, 12 weeks of setting up OpenClaw and Hermes. So first three posts are out there at theaverageguy.tv if you want to take a look at those. Not necessarily a how-to, and not even like a story, not even story-driven, more like, here's what I was thinking. Like, it's changed the way I've been thinking about stuff, which is just kind of crazy. And so if you do me a favor, check those out. Head out to theaverageguy.tv, right on the front page. Three posts that are right there. If you're listening to this later, they may have gone down a little bit. Just search OpenClaw in the search and you can find those. Appreciate you reading those. and giving me your feedback on that as well. Mike, I mentioned OpenClaw. I mentioned Hermes. Those are two of these I've been using. I know you started down that path, maybe not doing it now, but what brought you, you can go read my story at theaverageguy.tv, but what brought you into those two platforms, those orchestrators, so to speak?
Yeah, for me, so I work in a heavily regulated industry. So the use of AI has always been, we were going to be the last to kind of start using it at work. So, but I knew it was coming down the pipe and I really wanted to play at home and kind of just get an idea of what's going on. I casually use ChatGPT, but honestly, not even that much. I couldn't use it at work. So I wasn't using it to help me write. I wasn't using it in Excel or anything like that. Actually, if you want to talk to, I turned my wife into the power user of ChatGPT. Like she, and her thing is mainly, Addie, my daughter's birthday is coming up and she had ChatGPT create the entire birthday invite and it looks amazing. And so she's using it for a lot of graphical stuff. She's the PTO president. So like creating all the flyers, like she's like, oh, this just cranks out in seconds. So she's actually probably the power user. But I did fire up my own OpenClaw and I wanted to kind of see as a family, how could it work with calendaring? We're looking for some property around Nebraska. So sending me kind of keeping an eye out on open properties that come up and giving me alerts and those sort of things. So I spun up OpenClaw and I really spent a lot of time diving in. I really went full bore with it. And then for some reason, and I think I'll talk about kind of my pivot point and how now I'm thinking about it in a different way. It kind of got to the point where I was like, for some reason, it scares me more than anything. And I don't know if I like this running because I had given it some pretty wide freedoms on my network. Where I really found it useful was managing my home lab, everything, right? Home assistant, managing YAML configs and those sort of things. And it was really helpful, but started to worry me a little. So I shut that down. So a few months ago, shut that down. Haven't really looked back since. So I'm not a big AI user in my personal life, but where my brain has had to spend a lot of time is we did finally get it at work. But from a manager perspective, right? So for my mergers and acquisitions team, a lot of my brain power has had to go into how do I want our team using this? And then how am I going to answer their questions on what this means for their career progression, what this means for new hires coming into the group, what this means for everything. Because, you know, in M&A, we're largely, you know, we're building these massive Excel models and we're doing a lot of analysis work, a lot of things that honestly AI is pretty darn good at. And so we've been testing Claude and Claude Cowork and some of those things. And I think when I've had to spend so much of my brain power thinking in that way, right? It's not even how do I use it at work? It's how do I manage this with my people? It's changed my brain just a little bit on how we do this. And I think if I had to summarize it, what I've been telling the team is because I have a lot of young guys coming straight out of college they start all of our team members. If you're starting fresh, you start as an analyst. You've got to learn the basics first. You got to learn how to build models, how our deals work as you progress up. Even if you want to kind of go into the sales side, we want you to learn the modeling first. But the problem is now with Claude, it can create that base model in seconds, but I have no idea if my analyst actually understands the fundamentals going in behind it. Right. And so I've been, the mantra I've kind of been going at is, hey, Claude, what I want you guys to think about is this should not make you look any smarter to me, right? You, given unlimited time, should be able to recreate what Claude just built for you in that model. You should understand it. If I turned your Claude off tomorrow, you should be able to go back in, make all the edits, modify the model. However, it should make it look like there's four of you now, right? The productivity should increase. And where I kind of go with that is now you guys don't have to be the data entry. You guys get to elevate your game. You get to be now the second set of eyes. Before, you were creating the model. You had your manager reviewing it, going through. Think of yourself now as the manager. I want you guys being the second set of eyes and looking and catching and fixing errors. But also it allows those guys to, they can now skip the first stage of where we had them and they can elevate faster. So we have not done any reduction of any of our teams. it's honestly been a, hey, now how can we elevate you? Yeah. And I can take the person who is stuck doing models in Excel and I can say, come sit with me. Now they now have time to come sit with me on a call with a prospect and learn how those conversations go. How does talking to a client work? What kind of soft skills do you need to start developing when I want to start pulling you into those types of conversations? How do you deal with hard conversations? So we're able to focus a lot more on soft skills now, which has been really fun, and getting them into those conversations earlier. Whereas before they might've gotten stuck being an analyst for a few years because that's really what we needed, but now they're more efficient. So anyway, that's probably a little bit of a tangent from where kind of like how I'm thinking about, but that's what I'm dealing with currently. And that's where my brain is at. When you say AI, I instantly go to my three guys that are coming into my office saying, what does this mean for me? Where like, am I going to be eliminated? What's the new hire? And it was actually interesting. We didn't know we were getting it. And it was good. It was always no. And all of a sudden it was a random day. We all got the invite. And then they brought us in like, hey, we're going to let you guys try this out. We want to see how it goes. I had just gotten approval the week before to hire a new person from my team. And I had had the role picked out and I had filled up, you know, worked with HR to develop the job description. And I went back into my boss and I said, it's been a week now with Claude. I think I'm changing what I'm hiring for. I'm still hiring, but the role is going to look a lot different. What I thought I needed and what I need now look very different. Which is interesting. I mean, just it has changed the game a little bit. And I know that I'm coming in late. A lot of you probably in chat or you, Jim, have probably been dealing with this for maybe a year or more already, just because we got it so late. But it is interesting when you think about it from the management perspective of a business.
Yeah. Yeah, Bust Out says in chat, that's the right way to think about the AI for work. I agree, Mike. I love what it's done for me, or what it's changed for me is it's got me thinking more structurally like an engineer about problems. You know, I would kind of just start and be like, well, I'll grab some things and I'll throw some stuff in and I'll get some Excel spreadsheets and I'll, you know, and then, you know, and actually I had a problem at work for the last maybe year that I've been dreading. Like I needed to put together kind of a whole, it was going to take a whole bunch of data structured all completely differently from all different sources. And I needed to bring it down and you know, put it together and have it do some scoring. And, you know, like it was complicated. And yeah, could I have done that in Excel with just the capabilities of Excel? Sure. Did I want to? No. Like I wasn't interested in building out, you know, macros or whatever it was going to take to get that stuff done. I just wasn't interested. And the other day, we got this kind of request through the teams like, hey, I need this list and I need it now. And I know you were supposed to have it done like a year ago. Can you get that done now? Man, I tell you what, that got me out of a jam. Like I grabbed Claude and I'm like, hey, Claude, here's what I need you to do. Like, here is what I need you, how I need you to act, what I want you to do. I'm going to give you these things. They're going to be all messed up. You're going to have to work extra hard to find and make sure you're keeping track of headers, you know, in the spreadsheet so that you know what that is, make a good guess at what kind of data that is. And then here we go. And that took me, you know, 15 minutes to spin up a prompt. And then I just started giving it data. Like, here it is, here it is, here it is. And each time I gave it data, this is one of the cool things is it would check me. So it'd be like, okay, I got this file. This is what's in it. Here's some things to be concerned about. I'm seeing these kinds of errors. We had two records that didn't have a name in them. Like there's a couple duplicates in it. Like that's kind of stuff I could never have done. And I wouldn't have done, right? I wouldn't have had the capacity to check that kind of stuff, right? And then each time I would add it in, I'd add another, you know, data bit to it. It'd be like, oh, okay, so we can make a connection here and I can see this there and this ties in here and we might have an error there kind of thing. In yeah. Six or seven bits of data in, all of a sudden I had something, right? And then it started warning me of some things in there, like, hey, okay, you need to think this person looks like this record and this record are duplicate. Like you might want to physically check that kind of thing. In the early days, right, all we talked about was hallucinations and it making stuff up. All of a sudden, and I shouldn't say all of a sudden, but maybe for me, it's gotten really, really helpful on like thinking like it's thinking like an engineer when I'm doing these kinds of things. Like it's thinking like that software developer is like, hey, I went through the data and there's some things in here that may or may not be, you may want to take a look at. Like I'm not sure this is correct, right? Which has been incredible. And then I began to run scenarios. Like I'm like, okay, let's wait. I've got all these events. Let's weight these events in certain ways. Let's, you know, run a test. Boom. Comes out. I'm like, I don't like that weighting. Could you suggest another way of doing this? And so it did, based on the data and what I know, it's some of these kind of things. So I'm actually thinking more. Like, I'm thinking more in my job than I ever have. Some folks have been like, oh, AI makes you lazy. And I'm like,
because it took away the mundane things.
I come home and my head hurts. Like, I'm tired again. I kind of relate it to, like, in the old days of carpentry, you know, and you built a house in the 30s and you had a saw, like a hand saw and a hammer. And now we have all these battery operated tools that, you know, or whatever, this does stuff exactly right. It's sped up our construction process. We don't get too worried about that stuff, right? We're kind of like, oh, the power, you know, the nail gun is putting the hammerers out of business. And you're like, no, we can build more, right? So I get pretty excited from that standpoint of getting me to think more logically about problems.
Well, and everything you just said kind of goes back to the same thing. That did not make you smarter. You could, given unlimited time, if you had unlimited time to do that task, if you had 5 months, you would have gone through all that testing and you would have double checked and looked for duplicates and found it all, but it made you more efficient. And I think to your point too, it gives me the complementary skill sets of things that typically drag you. So like for me, for example, and I think a lot of people on my team were that type A finance numbers type people, building a deck is just you asked me to build a deck and I just dread it. But I have to build a deck about 7 times a week. And so I have to take data, make it look pretty. And I'm so bad at making things look pretty. Just the simple fact that I can give it the data that I created, it's perfect, it's good. And I was like, just give me a starting point. And all of a sudden there's this beautiful deck. Now it's not perfect wording, but all I needed was the 10 slides laid out and I can go in and start editing the wording. I just don't like creating the pretty thing, but it took care of that. Yeah. And now, like, I didn't realize, Jim, how many things I dread and then I procrastinate because I dreaded it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm knocking out the small things on my task list that I usually let fall through because I'm like, I just don't want to do it. And now it gives me that complementary skill set. And on the flip side, I look at, like, for example, our HR team. And our HR team, some of those, or maybe even marketing is a good example, very creative individuals. They hate working with numbers. Their use of AI has been more on the help with the number side, right? They're like, okay, help me understand, because they're more asking for business cases, then they make it look and sound amazing. That's their skill set. And so I think it's giving you that complimentary side that maybe you dread or you're not as good at or what it might be. But yeah, it's been a very interesting shift for me over the last, you know, few weeks.
A lot of listeners, we're talking about things they've been doing too. When the thing I was working on and you were too with this OpenClaw, let's call it a concept, right? Because I don't think that product is gonna be the one that makes it out, is gonna be the most popular. OpenClaw, Hermes. But from a conceptual standpoint, Mike, of this ability to run an AI orchestrator, in other words, be able to plug in your AI models, whatever you want to do on the bottom, and then have local access and control to your own AI locally, right? You said you started maybe giving it a little too much. I think I started the opposite and locked it down too hard because I was getting frustrated. I'm like, everybody says you should just do that. Why are you not doing that? And it was like, because you didn't give me permission to do that kind of thing, right? It was locked in. What do you think? You walked away from it. Do you think will it come back in some other form, do you think, for you? What's the use case that would make it worth showing back up in your home lab again?
I think for me, when the models get good enough that running them truly local, because, you know, I was only running my local stuff on a spare 3080. And so not a super beefy card. And so it did push me. I started paying for tokens, right? With Anthropic and all those. And the work product was so much better. But it was way too expensive. Like, I'm not going to justify $100, $200, $300 a month for this, like, yet. But the way this is all going, the power of those models that you're seeing now is going to run on your phone in no time. Like, it just will. So I think for me, having that ability local will probably be good. And then for me, it's just thinking about, I need to be able to do this in a way that fits my family at this point, right? I'm kind of the tech leader of the family, but they do, they're not the type of family that says, oh, that's cool, Dad. Good, cool that you use it. They're like, how do I use it? And I'm like, oh, I haven't thought about that. OpenClaw just built for me. And it'd be, if you do something wrong in there, it's going to mess. So I'm more from the family environment of how could they use it. It is wild watching kids grow up with this stuff. I will say that. I mean, just today, here's like the stupidest example. My boys, I came home from work. They had set up a zoo outside. They're really into animals right now. So they set up like a zoo. And so they come to our zoo and they're like, Dad, we have live interaction with the animals. And they're like, watch. And so I'm like, okay. So I walked up to their zebra stuffed animal. And all of a sudden I hear this voice like the zebra is, and it's like telling me, and I'm like, I don't know where it was coming from. They had my wife's phone. They were using the voice conversation feature with ChatGPT, and they had prompted it perfectly. And then they were like, so like, and that just clicked for them. Yeah. No one, we didn't, Hannah didn't say, oh, you could, they're just like, oh, I bet this would be really cool way to interact. And so it, like just little things like that, that they're picking up on, it's just part of their world. Right. They're only 8 and 9. So it's interesting. Well,
you said Addie, your youngest is just 11 months. And I have a 2-year-old Royce who's, she's 2. And we were down here messing. I was messing around. I have a laptop that's touchscreen, and the girls like to come down and paint pictures and do stuff, you know. And her 6-year-old sister has no problem. It's single touch, right? So Royce comes down. What's the first thing she does?
On your screen.
On the screen. Like on the laptop screen. She's trying to zoom, she's trying to pinch into that thing or zoom out, right? And I'm like, oh, no, Royce, you can't. It doesn't work that way. Like, it's only single touch. And she goes, like, she's not a clue that she can't. I mean, she's a multi-touch phone child, right? Yeah. And so that's just an example of some of those, you know, you think at 2, that is already embedded in her brain, how you interact. My 6-year-old granddaughter, she could swipe away alerts. Like, we'd be watching a video on the thing and an alert would pop up. She'd go, poof. You know, just swiping away alerts like they were nothing. And so it's just a different, like you said, it's different. We have no idea how they're going to come to this and see it in a way that is different than maybe, well, not maybe, different than the way we see it. And I see it a little bit different than you, right?
Yeah.
You know?
So. Well, and it is. And then, you know, because one of the things that scares me a little bit is, and luckily my kids are young enough, I think they missed it, is, but Hannah being a professor in college, she sees this all the time. We have a big problem with younger individuals who spend a lot of time with technology, not being able to have the same level of human interaction and conversation that the older generation has. So that combined with, we just eliminated all of the types of jobs that are sitting in front, you know, just very, we've eliminated a lot of solo producer jobs, or maybe not eliminated, but they've changed. And what they've changed to is now it's requiring those soft skills are very important. Like there is a premium on soft skills, emotional intelligence, communication. And so we just put a premium on that at the same time that all of a sudden we didn't do a great job of shepherding this generation through COVID of college and, you know, social media and those sort of things. So that is something that's, it's going to be interesting watching the culmination of those two things come together.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I in pre-show were talking a little bit, and everybody's saying this right now about the bubble bursting in some form, right? A correction of some kind.
Correction,
financials just don't make sense in a lot of ways. There will be some kind of, when you think of these AI orchestrators, right? These Hermes, this OpenClaw, do the fundamentals get a bit different if all of a sudden $20 plans are no longer available and they shoot to $100, right? What I pay for OpenAI's ChatGPT, it's $20. Like that's an easy yes all the time, right? Especially since with both Hermes and OpenClaw, I can use their OAuth to use some of those tokens that they're limited, but they're still, I can use them there, right? Do you think it's different if you're forced to only go with a local AI, right? If you could say you could only afford, or we get to a spot where it's not available to us, or, you know, I don't know, some scenario where the cloud just gets out of reach for most people. Do you think your work with the local, working with a local AI changes that for you at all?
I think it's going to be interesting because not that it doesn't already, but just like it does in a lot of other industries, the corporations using it is going to fund the personal use of it, right? Think about that for in a lot of tech areas, I'm just thinking of Home Labs. If you use Tailscale is free. It's an amazing service. The reason they can do that is because the corporations pay. They hope that you're going to take it to work. Work pays. And so I get to use Tailscale for free. I think with AI, the only interesting part about that, though, is so as corporations, because just now corporations are starting to pay and the dollars, the revenue is starting to show up finally. The question is going to be, I think, in my brain, are those data centers actually going to need to be used as this gets better and more efficient?
Yeah.
Are we going to build up a lot of this infrastructure and not need it? Right. Is it like, how's that going to go? But yeah. And then the shift to local, if local though stays being a nerd thing, I call it a nerd thing, right? It's kind of hard to set up local. It is pretty difficult at this point. Yeah. If it stays that way, it's going to be interesting.
What's really hard about it for me is just there's too many options. This is the thing. Like, you're like, okay, where do I start? I mean, what model do I use? What's the right model to use for this? You know, in an economy where you're burning tokens and they're costing you, it's like being at Dave and Buster's. You have no idea how much those tokens are in those tickets that you get for these games are actually worth anything, right? And so you're just flying through them because it's fun. You know, and then you get that $800 bill in a month because you're smoking through these tokens, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's some economies there. We've got to kind of work our way through. So that adds a layer of complication to it. And then what model Gavin was on last week, and he actually, there's a website, whatcanirun.com or something like that. And it'll tell you based on your hardware and what you have, what models you can run. That's really the first thing I've seen like that, where it's kind of a clue to like, hey, what model should I use for this? When I was first setting up OpenClaw, I was trying to like, hey, I don't want to burn all my 5.5 tokens all the time for everything. Is there a way to push some of those requests that are simple downstream, right? So we tested a bunch of other models on this. But that took an enormous amount of time, right? To test those models, come up with a test for the model. It's not like that test existed. I had to create a test to kind of benchmark the models. Right now, some of you, I was listening to the most recent Windows Weekly this week with Paul Theroux. He spent about 20 minutes talking about all these models. I wanted to break my phone. I was like, stop it. It's too much.
I think that'll all get automated.
Okay.
I think eventually, like when you think of like your iPhone, like I know we give Siri and Copilot and all those a hard time because they're not caught up, but I mean, that is, like it or not, that's going to be how 95% of people end up interacting with this, is whatever is built into their device. And I'm thinking that eventually, based off of what you're asking and how you're interacting, it's going to do things locally on your phone. It's going to say, okay, now I'm going to be able to utilize, a model that's in the cloud and maybe however you pay for that. But I don't know. I see it going maybe that direction where we don't even know what model we're using. That was my biggest surprise using it for work is I have a selector in every chat. And, I know Fable 5 just got disabled, but I mean, I can go all the way up to Fable 5 or I can stick with Sonnet. And to be honest, that's been the biggest barrier for us is we have to train people how to use AI. Yeah. And what's appropriate, like what models are good for what? What is a skill? How do you use it?
Do I put an agent in? Am I creating a skill? Is this just a chat? Are we doing these things? As somebody at work wrote a script that basically you put in and it's kind of some hints and it's like, this thing will save you 40% on your tokens, your token use kind of thing. You give it to it and the AI comes back, it's on Claude. The AI comes back and it's like, okay, I'm all set. I'll save you 40% on tokens, like whatever. We just told this thing to do less, kind of. So it is the craziest wild west that I've seen.
It is.
And I'm so glad I'm alive for this. You don't get, the internet was this way, not quite the same, but the internet was crazy when it first got it started, right? All the things we could do, home networking, home labs, all that setup, speed. Hacking speeds, driving around on the Wi-Fi, stealing people's Wi-Fi, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think we're kind of back on that. So anyways. Well, I'm glad to hear that you gave those a try. If you come back to it, and you always do.
I do. I didn't delete the VM. It's just a VM sitting on my Unraid box. So I could easily just click it back on and be back up and running.
I spent a ton of time doing it. It's embarrassing how much time I spent down here doing. Sometimes I feel shame. It's like 11:30, 12:30 at night. I got to get up at 5:30 that next morning. And I'm like, why did I do that? And you're like, did I actually get anything done tonight? Like, did that do anything? Was I all this code that we wrote, all these things that we did, all this stuff put together, did that actually make a difference? And then you just go to sleep. I wake up the next day. Hey, speaking of that, well, let's switch gears a little bit. You got fiber in your neighborhood, and we're seeing a lot of fiber going in Omaha. Again, a lot of folks outside of the Omaha area, like, fiber, man, we've had that for 10 years or whatever. We're starting to see more and more neighborhoods. You know, I'm on T-Mobile's wireless, and, you know, I'm getting pretty good speeds. I still struggle with the up a little bit, like everybody does on those kinds of things. How's the fiber experience going for you? What's that working out?
Phenomenal. Like, and this was interesting. So I think actually the reason I like fiber is just because I'm not using Cox anymore. Like, I just Cox internet, if you guys have them, right? It's just like Spectrum, it's just like Xfinity, all those. They're antiquated, they're old. But so signed up with MetroNet a year ago. I think actually I've talked about this on the podcast probably twice since I pre-ordered. They thought they were coming to the neighborhood, so MetroNet did the pre-order. In the meantime, MetroNet gets bought by T-Mobile. So it's been the weirdest switchover. Technically, I'm with T-Mobile, but when I call T-Mobile, they're like, if I go to T-Mobile.com, I my account shows like, hey, you can still do your installation. I'm like, I'm already installed. So I go through MetroNet. But the experience with MetroNet, like, they're nerds and it's awesome. So nice. And just the cost. And just, I was paying $160 a month to Cox for unlimited internet, 1 gig down and 100 meg up. Yeah. And I'm paying $70 to MetroNet for 2 gig up and down. And I take full advantage of it. But when I call them, because you do have to call to get a static IP, because otherwise you're carrier grade NAT. So that was a difference between Cox and Fibers. You're on carrier grade NAT, which if you do any self-hosting at home, you know that now there's ways around it with some other ways, but got the static IP. And the guy on the phone was just like a nerd and he was great. He's like, oh, so are you plugging this into like a PF sense route? I'm like, that's exactly what I did. I got PF sense. He's all right. Well, so you'll want to do this. He goes, by the way, he goes, we're truly unlimited. All the ports are open to you. We don't lock stuff down. He goes, have a blast. And I was like, I just love it. Like, that was a great comment. That was better than any conversation I've had. And even the guy who came out to install it, we had a blast. Like, I helped him install. And he's like, are you sure you want to help? Like, I'm loving this. And so I was like crawling because I wanted it. Like, I'm looking right here because my server room. I wanted the fiber to run straight into the server room. And usually they're just going to drill into your main level of your house. My server room's in my basement. And he was all for it. He's like, hey, if you can get me a hole, he was, I'll run it wherever. So we had fun. We were talking about the whole install process and everything, but it's been absolutely fantastic. The speeds have been great, as advertised, and it doesn't dip. Full 2 gig up, 2 gig down. I think on the last episode we talked about how I did all the prep. So I prepped my network with a lot of 10 gig, well, a little bit of 10 gig, mainly 2.5 gig Ethernet on all my main devices. Yeah. So anything that's hardwired that can be is on 2.5, all my servers. And you know,
so right, you're basically full speed, right?
Full speed. And I think one of the biggest things for me is, I love using Tailscale as my VPN. But I also want the privacy aspect of using an exit node. So an exit node on Tailscale, think of that as like if you guys use private internet access or NordVPN, right, where you can tunnel your internet. I like to tunnel mine back home and always appear. So if I'm on my cell phone outside my house, I always want to appear like I'm coming out of my house. And before, with 100 meg up out of my house, that meant my download to my phone was only 100 meg, which wasn't great. And now I use my home as my exit node, and I'm hitting my speed on my phone on cellular or Wi-Fi, I'm not hitting my 2 gig cap. So it's been great. I know it's something that, like you said, a lot of the audience is like, well, I've had fiber forever. Yeah. But when you go from waiting for it forever to actually getting it, it's been great. The cord is still laying on my lawn. They still haven't come out and buried it. They've come out a few times. They keep making excuses of, oh, there's roots. And then because they use contractors. So MetroNet will come out and say, oh, they can easily bury it. Then their contractor comes out and says, I can't, there's too many roots in the way. And then they just keep fighting back and forth. So I still have to pull it open over my mower when I'm
mowing.
When
you mow?
But it's great.
Well, we got Google Fiber in the neighborhood. They came through a couple months ago, maybe a month or two ago, put the lines in. I've been surprised they have not been hitting me as hard as I expected. I thought once they're in the neighborhood, I would get an endless amount of flyers like, hey, join.
Or actual door knockers. T-Mobile in our neighborhood is knocking a ton.
Really?
Once a week, they're coming around, knocking on everyone's door.
You know, I'm 55. I pay 55. I'm not 55. I'm close, but I'm not 55. I pay 55 for the T-Mobile wireless, which is super convenient. No wires. I don't have to worry about this. It works great. We're a block away from a tower. So like I'm getting showered. I can get it out in the shed, like all those kinds of things. I had to think hard about when Google Fiber came in, like, well, maybe it's time to make the jump to fiber. You know, when Mike, when you, do you think, okay, so you're two up and two down, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that'll go to five at some point? I mean,
I could actually, I could pay for five.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, so they'll go money. Up to, it's just money. And for me, I can utilize two up and two down. I couldn't utilize five up, five down.
Oh, of course you could.
I mean, maybe I would be able to add a lot more users to some certain services.
You back up me, I'll back up you. We could be.
That honestly crossed my mind of like, this really does open up the door of like the buddy system on backup, you know, set up a ZFS share and here, I'll give you 20 terabytes on my machine. You give me 20 on yours. And
yeah,
it really does open up those possibilities.
It does bring, that's the old days. You know, it's been years since we talked about buddy backups and those kinds of things. You know, a lot of folks moved in the direction of just taking another, just taking another piece of equipment to the in-laws or the parents' place, set it in a corner, make sure you can VPN into it. You know, every once in a while, you got to have somebody turn the thing on again.
That's what I have in my in-laws. Yep. Right. That's what I have. I have a little TrueNAS box sitting down there just essentially receiving backups.
Right on.
But it's, it's been the interesting part though, Cox did nothing to try and keep me.
No.
And it was, And what I said was, I actually said, hey, if you can give me, I said, I don't care the speed. If you can give me something, I will pay you $25 a month, turn the speed to whatever, and I will utilize you as a backup internet. I was just like, here, $25. And they're like, well, our lowest would be 70. I'm like, nope, like literally $25.
Right.
And I was honestly, if they had gotten down to 40, because I was doing them, I'm like, okay, I was paying 160, now I'm paying 70. I'll go to 110 and have a backup internet, because the one thing I have heard about MetroNet is as they're doing this massive rollout, there are some times where it'll go down because of construction, because they're building it all out. And so, but they're like, no, sorry. I'm like, okay. I mean,
no,
I just like, I would thought you would have been like, sure, give me five up, five down and take my $30 a month. I don't know. It was interesting.
When I moved to T-Mobile, I was like, I'm going, it's 55 a month. It was 50 if you go on direct pay. And they're like, okay, well, we'll send a guy, we'll send somebody out. It's like, that's it. Cause for a lot of years, they were kind of known as the, you would ask, they would be like, well, we got a special deal for you for the next year kind of deal. And you could just kind of keep rolling that special deal over. And maybe they just eventually they caught on and they're like, hey, we're just going to take who we have. It makes you kind of wonder the days of copper and all that internet line, all that internet stuff that's laid with copper. We got to be, I don't know, maybe in the days of dial up, we thought that would never end as well. And eventually it did, right? Kind of came to its conclusion. You got to think at some point, cable internet goes away, right? Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would think so. Yeah. I would think so.
Yeah, for sure. Uncle Marv out in the chat room. He says, come on, Jim, do it. You know you'll want it. So, yeah, I don't know, Marv. I'm having a hard time thinking about, I should look into it and see if there's any deals with Google. Be a good service. It's still gigabit, right? You got two. I'd pay 70 for gig up and down, which is twice as fast. Twice as fast down as I have now, and five times faster up.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Yeah. Well, and I think just having the low latency is really nice too. On the fiber optic, and T-Mobile is doing it right. Their founders plan is a price lock for 10 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that is crazy.
Because my expectation 70. Was they're getting everyone in. Yeah, I'm paying 70. So 70 for the next 10 years. My expectation was they're going to get you in at 70, and in 3 years, it's like 150. I'm going to end up paying the same. Mm-hmm. But 10-year price lock, I'll take it.
Okay. Well, I'd love to hear if you're in live in chat. I'd love to hear what you're on and what you're paying. If you're watching this on YouTube after the fact, let us know in the comments who are you using? What are you paying? And what do you wish for? Like, what's the best? It be reasonable, friends. Like, be reasonable. But what are you wishing for? It's one of those kinds of things. As the tech guy in the house, we're always thinking about those kinds of speeds and how that works. And so I'd love to hear from you. Throw those in the chat here or down in the comments in YouTube. Mike, I've been thinking about getting an e-bike forever now. Like, man, this space is great. Right before the pandemic, the e-bikes started getting real popular. During the pandemic, I think that was a space where started to grow, right? You've recently picked up a mountain e-bike, right? What does that look like? Tell me what you got.
Yeah, and this came from, you know, where we've still been heavy into taking the camper out to all the state parks. And, like, it is our family thing. We found our thing. Like, our family, we are so happy when we take that camper out. We're going to South Dakota next week, going to the Black Hills. We love it. One of the things we noticed was, number one, a lot of the state parks are outlawing electric scooters. And my boys, that's what they were bringing, is their electric scooters. And there's always bike trails. And I said, okay. Like, boys, should we get into mountain biking? And I took them down a YouTube rabbit hole is what I did. I found some families that mountain bike and do extreme mountain biking, and they were all in. They're like, yes, let's start mountain biking. Now, they're going to be really disappointed when they realize we don't live in Whistler or like Colorado and have these amazing downhill mountains. That was kind of the impetus of getting into it. But my wife and her family they got into e-bikes about 2, maybe 3 years ago. So her parents got them, and they love to do just nice and calm gravel trail for as like 50 miles, and they just go out. And especially my mother-in-law has had 2 knee replacements. And so the electric bike is huge for her. So last year for Mother's Day, we got Hannah an e-bike, but it's like a commuter, right? Addie can ride on the back, but it can go forever. So I kind of knew. So when we go on these trips, they all ride together. So I was like, okay, I kind of want to do it, but I don't know. I just, like, if I'm going to do an electric bike, like, I kind of want to be able to go off road. So I started to do a lot of research into electric mountain bikes. And Jim, it's a very interesting world, because e-bikes have been around so long. Electric mountain bikes have really started taking off kind of in just the past, call it 2 years or so.
Yeah.
And there's a big, like, the traditional mountain bikers versus the e-mountain bikers. And it's like this thing.
Of course there is a division, right?
There's a division, because the regular mountain bikers say you got to earn your turn is what they say. You got to pedal up that mountain to be able to enjoy the down. And all the electric guys, but electric mountain bikes are a little different. There's no throttle, right? So you can't just push your thumb on the throttle and go. They are mid-drive motors instead of hub motors. So in a mountain, and this is, you can get non-mountain bikes that do this, but your motor is in your crank set. So it's helping you with your turns. It's not in the back spinning the actual wheel. So they're a lot lighter, a lot more nimble. So when you actually look at the bike, you would be like, at first you'd be like, oh, just a normal mountain bike. And then all of a sudden you look like, wait, that crank set looks really big for some reason. And it's because the motor is right there.
Where does the battery sit then? Does it sit
in
the
down tube?
Oh, yeah,
it's integrated into the tube. So it's not even on the outside anymore. It's just, so your tube looks a little fatter up front, but they kept the geometry of the mountain bike. That was really important, because these guys, they now have races, like downhill races, just like they do on regular mountain bikes with these. So that was the big, but the hard part is they weigh a lot more.
Yeah,
so your electric mountain bike is going to weigh about 52 pounds versus your regular mountain bike that's like 30. So you have an extra 20 pounds there as you're flowing around. But I think the fun part has been, you know, kind of like how we talked about with AI a little bit, how it eliminated a little bit of the barrier to entry. And like all of a sudden that thing that you were dreading, okay, now I'm kind of getting excited about it.
Yeah.
You can turn the assist off, you can go, but it got me, I don't know if I ever would have taken the plunge and done mountain biking without a little bit of the assistance of the e-bike side. I haven't biked my entire life, so I don't have like the pedal strength yet. You know, I couldn't do long bike rides, but, and then the tech angle has also, like, the tech in these things, Jim, the computer that's in it. I mean, we're talking everything from, it calculates all the jumps you did and how far your jump was and the impact G-force when you landed. So at the end of every run, you could compare with your buddy, like, oh, I got, you know, 15 feet and this much force. It can track to your watch. And actually, the cool part about these bikes is you can wear a heart rate monitor, Bluetooth to the bike, and you can say, bike, I want to do 130 BPM. That's my goal.
Oh,
yeah. And it will adjust the amount of assistance it gives you, so you stay in that zone. Mm-hmm. So like those sort of things on a mountain bike are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it's been fun. So you've thought about it. Did you ever think mountain bike, or are you thinking more of the electric commuter?
I was thinking a commuter. It would just be good to have a ride around. We actually, in Omaha, we have a pretty good B-cycle, the community
here. We do.
And during the pandemic, man, they exploded. I was riding those bikes, the manual bikes. They started first. Then they started right before the pandemic. They started introducing the e-bikes into it. You could get one or the other, right? I always pick the e-bike, right? Because you can just fly on those things.
Yeah.
It was super awesome. And then during the pandemic, man, they just exploded. They're everywhere in town.
They are.
It's fairly reasonable. You can pick one up. You just have to have it for an hour. You have to check it in and you get a day pass. I think a day pass is like $20, or we'll say it's 17, I think is what it is. But let's just say it's close to 20. It's not terrible if you're going to be biking around all day, check the bikes in. You could get around town on a bike. So it's got me thinking about it. But man, I've had such bad luck with bikes. Like I bought them, I've used them. Not as much as I wanted to. I don't want to bike to work and be sweaty. I have a gym at work, so I could shower. You do too, right? So
yep, that's what I'm getting ready to do next week. Is start right. Yeah.
It's probably the time to do this. And it's a 15-mile bike ride for me to get into work. It would be nice if it was assisted. I love the, and I forget what Ed Sullivan, my buddy, always talks about in the biking world. There's this heart rate zone idea where there's a zone like when you do a Peloton, when you're on a Peloton bike, you can set it to these zones and then the intensity goes up or down based on the zone you're in, right?
Yeah.
To be able to do that in real time on a bike on the road would be super cool as well, to say, like you're saying, like, okay, I still want to work out. So make it so my heart rate is where it needs to be based on the workout or what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool, right?
It is. And I think the electric bike, a couple ways to think about it, it almost just allows you to get more laps in, where maybe you would only go out and do two laps, three laps and you're tired. You can get six or seven in with it. But I mean, it is not as good of a workout. That's just the matter of it. Like, it's not, but it gets me out there.
It could be.
It could be, but it gets me out there when I wouldn't have otherwise. Right. So I come at it, I wasn't a traditional mountain biker, and now considering e-bike, I'm like, I'm not out biking at all. And now I am.
Right.
And I love it. And my boys are loving it. So I did not realize, Jim, and you probably have, because you've looked at bikes and you've ridden bikes and you've done it all. Just all the options out there and the things you can hurry out on. I mean, I was trying to decide between, do I want a hardtail? Do I want a full suspension? Yeah. And then, what kind of fork do I want? And like, what's worth it? What's not? And you go carbon or alloy. And like, there are just what kind of wheels? Yeah. And are you going to run tubeless or with the tube? It's fun.
It's like buying a computer.
Honestly, Jim, I was so dumb. I didn't know there was such a thing as a Presta valve. I thought all air valves were the exact same. I thought they were all just like the ones in our car. No. I had no idea that when you start to get into these, there's that different valve. Mm-hmm. I about broke my boy's bike, because I just shoved my air chuck on there, not knowing there was a whole nother style. And that's when I learned about Presta valves. So
it's like buying a computer now. Like, am I going to go ARM? Am I going to go Intel? Do I want to buy AMD? Now we have an NVIDIA option, right? We could go with a smart laptop, right? Which sounds pretty cool. By the way, that may go back to our AI discussion. Let me ask you really quick. Would you get a Spark? Like, if you were going to host your own AI at home, would you consider one of these Spark laptops or one of these devices? They're expensive. They're a couple thousand bucks. But,
if the performance is there,
paying a couple hundred bucks or paying $100 a month for the AI, all of a sudden, NVIDIA, you're like, maybe I'll pick up one of the... Have you looked at those at all?
A little bit. And mainly, I think I was kind of looking really heavily into it when I was up in the open cloud, thinking about firing it up. But the cost does, if you are using it, It works. And because the thing is, here's the benefit, Jim. The benefit of OpenClaw was it was running all the time and doing stuff in the background for me. But what that means is you have no idea what bill you're racking up if you don't put some guardrails around it.
Yeah.
But if you knew that you were running it all local and if the local was snappy, again, this goes back to like once those local models get to the point where the other ones are now, they're more viable.
I don't know if we're ever going to get to a spot where we're happy. The frontier models are so good. And then you're like, I'm running a 20B. You're like, it's not very good.
20B. I was trying to put like a 7B on one of my cards. No, and I was like, it's not great. It's not great.
Talking to Gavin, I was running a GPT OSS 20B. And he was like, that's like 7 tokens a second or something. I was like, I know. But it was working well in the environment that I was in kind of deal. Well, back to we're not going to AI, but back to the mountain bike. Good for you for doing that. I mean, this is actually, I think, where the tech meets practicality. And it's finally like with bikes, I think we're finally to that spot where all the tech is working the way it should. You can get a bike that will do anything for you at this point. It can be as hard or as easy as you want it to be. I see kids like just zipping around the neighborhood on their bikes full assist. They're not pedaling those things full assist, right? And they come in all shapes and sizes. It's crazy what's available in the bike space right now, if that's where you want to be.
Yeah, I guess that would, my call to action for all parents is like that we are running into something where a few are going to ruin it for everyone. And just having that conversation, if your kid has one, awesome. I love kids having fun, but having the conversation about like knowing the rules of the road, where you ride it, where you can't, because the problem is they're all getting lumped into electric bikes.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden we're going to lose that ability. It kind of happened in Nebraska State Parks for a little bit. Yep. Yep. And now they have their classification of class 1, 2, or 3 e-bike. And so a class 1, if you don't have a throttle, up to 750 watts of power, and it's capped at 20 miles per hour for that motor, what it helps you get up to, great, you can ride it anywhere. But again, you start getting into one of the kids with the throttle and it's just goosing it and tearing up trails, it's going to ruin it for everyone. So not even ruin it for everyone, I do see a lot of kids that I'm like, something tragic is going to happen in our neighborhood soon.
They're
extremely fast. And it's with kids of ages that haven't had to learn the rules of the road because they're not even driving yet.
Right.
So they don't know. And it does worry me a little bit.
It's crazy. They don't even know what they missed with regular bikes, right?
No.
Some of these kids are like, they've never been on a regular bike. And you're like, it hasn't always been this way.
All you gotta do is you gotta show them the old pop can trick of running over the pop can, and then it sounds like a motorcycle, and they're all back on their manual bikes. They all think that's the coolest thing. I just think we need to, or the card in the spokes. Cards in the spokes. Yep. It's all right. We just gotta show them the classics. Yep. And they'll be right back.
No, right on. Okay.
I 3D printed their fenders, actually. That was my final piece I was gonna say. So you can start to combine your hobbies. So for my boys, the mud guards, I found some really cool models. And so now we're printing mud guards for the bikes. And so all the hobbies are starting to intertwine. They hold up great.
Okay.
Printing filament has come so far. ASA is my new favorite filament for anything that's going to be outdoors. The sun factor, it doesn't get brittle. The filament side has gotten
hold up
fantastic.
To the cold. Does it hold up to the cold?
Yes.
It's sitting in the garage.
Yeah, ASA things? Does. Okay. ASA okay. does. And you guys, you got to kind of be ASA. PETG does a little bit. PLA will not. But yeah, they start playing around with those sort of things, and it works pretty well. And you can prototype with it, like have sort of like fun.
No, for sure.
And if they break it, you're like, that was 3 cents.
Yeah.
Ooh, because for bike stuff one. Break. Yeah, I'll print you another one, yeah, right? Like, break your fender. I don't really care. Yeah, they have like hand guards that you can print. So like, like on a dirt bike, how you have those hand guards in front.
Yeah.
Printing those, water bottle holders. Actually, the things that I printed the first was an air tag holder that hides and goes on the bike for my boys that don't have, just for theft stuff. But all sorts of things to print with them.
No, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, we're in a good spot with e-bikes. I think this is the golden age of e-bikes. I keep thinking about $1,500, nice e-bike. And then I'm like, I could get a mower too. I could get a robot. Not really, but I could get
Oh man. Well, we got to save that for the next episode. I have been so close.
Okay. Okay.
But Hannah and I's conversation was, and it was a funny one. She's like, you can't raise boys that don't know how to mow a lawn. And our boys haven't been old enough yet to mow. And I said, I completely agree with you. She goes, if you send our boys off into the world and they don't know how to mow a lawn, you have failed. And I was like, that is so true. And so we're at least going to wait until the boys know how to mow. Now I might cut them out and get the mower, but,
okay. But let me just say, Mike, from a guy with experience, I would never let my children mow my lawn. That was like, there's a lot of things that the kids do. The lawn is mine. Like I never let my kids mow the lawn. Now,
oldest? See, I'm like itching for Emmett to be good at it.
No. The lawn was mine. Like don't mess with my lawn. Like I can't. So I was super, Sarah, even when I broke my leg back in 2003, I was out for, I don't know, about 12 weeks. Fortunately, it was in the spring. The lawn didn't grow that much. And she's always like, oh, I'll mow it for you. And my neighbors were like, get those boys out there. And I'm like, no. That's my lawn. Like, I don't have many things that are my own. That's my lawn. All right. So, but my oldest who bought a house, great lawnmower. He figured it out. It's fine. In fact, he's crazy like me. He does all the same things.
So you're saying I'm not going to ruin him if I don't.
You're not going to ruin if they don't mow. They're going to know how to mow the lawn because Hannah is going to make sure they know how to mow the lawn. Right. But it's okay if they don't know now. As adults, it's pretty easy to figure out. The other two, the one lives in an apartment and didn't have to worry about it. The other one lives in a house, but he doesn't mow as much as he should. And then the fourth has OHA, and they have contracted lawnmowers. And so he doesn't mow his lawn. A guy in him comes by. So I wouldn't worry about it, Mike. I mean, yes.
Well, and to be fair, my kids won't be able to afford a house till they're 45 the way things are going. So by then it'll all be robot lawnmower. So, who knows? Maybe they won't even need it.
Joe, you never know. Joe just jumped in. Good timing, Joe. He says, evening, gentlemen. I have to get caught up this weekend. Had to get the yard mowed. And he comes in right as we're talking about mowing the yard. Well, yeah.
My point back to Hannah though is like the reason I don't want it's not that I'm like I just don't have time with coaching and with like all of our nights are taken. Yeah, and then it always feels like the one night you have it rains. And I was like, the boys aren't going to be in any different position either, like because they're just as busy. Yeah. So there's the debate back and forth. I want to sell my rider and kind of look at them. They've gotten really good.
They have really gotten good. Okay, that'll be a topic next time.
Okay, we'll save that.
Okay, I said all that stuff about my lawn, right? This year has been the first year that there's been a couple days already. I've been like, I don't want to mow my lawn. Like, it's the first time ever I felt.
Tide is turning.
Like, no, I'm like, it's hot. I'm tired. Yeah. Like, couldn't it just mow itself? You know, and so all of a sudden that Yarbo looks pretty good, right? I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, there's a bunch out there now. The early mowers, we're not going to talk about this now, but the early mowers were weak. They wouldn't climb hills. We now have these tracked mowers. I saw a mower the other day that's shooting grass out the side. I was like, okay.
And no longer the need for the external GPS signal things. They all have LiDAR plus camera. Like they're getting so good.
It's just $2,000.
We'll save it.
It's just $2,000. Yeah. We'll save it for that.
Yeah, $2,000. For the next.
Okay. Last thing. Ed would want me to ask you about this because WeagerNet is a topic that comes up all the time when I'm talking to him. Last time we talked to you, Meshtastic. Give us a quick update. What's going on in the mesh world?
Oh man, we could take this so many different directions, Jim. So I'll make a very long story short. With using the same LoRa devices, MeshCore came about. So Meshtastic was first. That's the firmware. That's the software you're running. MeshCore came on the scene and has kind of taken the mesh community by storm. I would say a majority of people I've talked to, the people who kind of take city infrastructure, if you are in a metropolitan area and you're trying to make it actually work, you've switched to MeshCore. The way that they structure things with only certain devices being repeaters, other devices being clients, it works better. Even within that, if you guys want, I'm not going to go into it now, but if you guys want a fun little diatribe, you can look up Andy Kirby from in MeshCore. And so that, I mean, there's even been drama of the MeshCore team breaking up and coming back, but we've all switched to MeshCore. And did I go out or did you go out, Jim?
That was me.
Okay, so. I was going to keep talking. Good. I kept talking. I kept going. Okay, so you're back. But so long story short, everyone has switched to MeshCore. We're all using the same exact devices. But what's interesting, Jim, is what we've been running into lately with MeshCore, what comes with MeshCore is a little bit more, you kind of need to be organized as a community. You need to make certain decisions. It's not just plug and play like Meshtastic was, but that's the whole reason that MeshCore works better. MeshCore, we now have built out Omaha and Lincoln to be, you can be anywhere in Omaha and Lincoln and reliably message any of your buddies. You and I could be anywhere in Omaha and Lincoln and reliably message back and forth by the mesh. It's awesome. That has taken a lot of coordination though. You're planning out where to put the nodes, what spreading factor we're on certain things. But what's been fascinating, Jim, is like, it's almost like following an open source project. And when there all of a sudden is a lot of disagreement on what direction the project should go or what they should implement and like how that gets decided on when there's no governing body. It's been fascinating. The Omaha scene has seen a lot of, there was two camps of what direction we wanted to go with a certain setting. And then one person bought a website domain and that they thought that made them kind of the master of everything. Turns out it kind of did. They kind of just said, I'm the leader now. And everyone's like, okay. And he's a nice enough guy. So it worked out just fine. But watching, because so we have a Discord and just like watching all the things that go on there. And then one of the guys just really didn't like that decision, that guy. So he's been spamming the public channel on the mesh and just like, he set up a bot on it that just auto replies to everyone. And so it's been fascinating kind of watching how a project like that and how infrastructure can get built, but without a governing body and without consensus, the fragmentation that really starts to happen. It has been fascinating.
Yeah, it's always interesting. Humans left kind of in, you know, it's Lord of the Flies, like kind of thing, right? Very little governance. They got to figure some things out. You get these communities grow up and you know, the open source community is just riddled with this, right? This is kind of the, and, you know, listen, the other alternative is closed source Microsoft or closed source Apple or, right, or closed source Oracle or fill in the blanks, right? Where you're not getting access to the source code, you're just using it. You don't get any say in what goes on for the most part, right? So it is such a struggle in an open source community. And I run a community at Gallup that's kind of like this in a way where we kind of open it up and folks kind of get to say what they need to say inside the groups, but I have to kind of moderate it in a way. Otherwise, it starts degenerating down into everybody just self-promoting for themselves. You know, they're like, hey, look at me. Look at my stuff. I want to talk about me. It's me. Oh, I'm the me monster. You know, me. And that's a Brian Regan skit, by the way. So don't I stole that from Brian Regan. I just want to be really, really clear about
that.
You're
going to get flagged on YouTube now.
Yeah, no, that's Brian Regan. I'm not a comedian. that's his work. But the open source community, those are tough, right? You got to experience that firsthand, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun though. Like kind of watching how it all ends up working itself out. And even just the point of like some guys made an admin group for the Discord channel and then they kind of self-moderate. But one of the other guys came in and was like, well, no one owns the mesh, right? Like I'll go create another admin group over it. So it's just, it's interesting. But for the most part, I will say what's been impressive is how no one needs to follow any rules, but they all kind of do. Yeah. And the kindness towards the others, besides the one guy who always wants to cause an issue, everyone else, I mean, we're hopping in the Discord and getting on a voice channel to help the owner of the analyzer. Cause now we have an analyzer that analyzes all the traffic. I'll give you the link. You can go take a look. It's actually kind of fun. You can watch all the messages go across the mesh.
Yeah.
We set that up to monitor and all of us have observers that are collecting that data, sending it to his server and he's running it. But all of us were in there helping him code something one night. And so it's a cool community. You do find a lot of cool people. We actually did a meetup person, nice. Which was kind of cool. Nice. Kind of reminded me of a ham radio meetup. We actually, some of us hams brought our ham radios too.
Nice.
So it's fun, but it has been interesting watching how decisions get made.
Yeah.
I was saying when you were dropping out, even the core mesh core developers, so the guys who developed the firmware, they had a huge falling out with essentially some guy who came in. He's known to kind of do this. He's a YouTuber, so he has a following. He came in and he essentially stole their trademark. And so they had to completely take a separate website. So if the old official MeshCore site is now run by this guy that everyone hates. Mm-hmm. He came in, tried to steal the trademark, and he wanted to monetize everything, but never contributed to the dev. So even the official Meshcore team like deals with that, and you kind of watch it. And then you look at it at a local level of us trying to build out a really cool mesh here in Omaha and Lincoln. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. Ed had given you, I don't know if we talked about that, but WeagerNet had gotten to be the kind of what we'd call that, right?
And the WeagerNet is stronger than ever right now.
Are you connecting to WeagerNet? Are you talking to Uyghur over the, he always asked me those kinds of things. Are you talking to Uyghur over there? I'm like, I haven't thought about that. I thought you'd had some gear. I was going to come over and pick it up. I never did, right? I never got over
there. I do need, I still need to get you one just so you can like play. It is, it is, it's just fun.
Can I put Open Claw on it? Is that
sure?
Does Open Claw have any? Could you deploy? You know, one of the things, speaking of that, I mean, as I've been doing this work on the AI, you know, I'm getting ready to do some replotting with this crypto. Well, we'll wrap it up with this. Replotting with this crypto Chia project that I've been working on for years now. Ken, thanks.
That's still going. I was actually
It's still rolling. They're still doing pretty well there. You know, they're doing some interesting things, and I stay close enough to it, right? But they have a new plot coming along. And I thought, you know, this would be a perfect thing for a bot to do, is teach the thing how to do the plotting and then just let it do it.
Let it do
it. You know, right? And this is where Open Claw or Hermes, right? You give it local control and you're like, okay, well, keep some guardrails on it. I want you to stay in this space. Put it here. Do these kinds of things. Teach it to do the optimum for this. And then it just does its thing. You know, I have been surprised. For the longest time I struggled to get the Blue Eddy and the EcoFlow onto my home assistant network.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
And it's Bluetooth, right? It's that I'd heard they were locked down, you know, you're kind of whatever. The Blue Eddy was particularly difficult, and OpenClaw cracked it in about 2 minutes. It was like, here it is. I was like, hey, can you get the Blue Eddy hooked up? It was like, here it is. I was like, what just happened? It was crazy.
It's those types of problems that I honestly, there were some of those that I just kind of ignored. Like, oh, but yeah, if I could ever find a solve, that'd be great. You kind of forget about them because I'm not smart enough to do it. And then I was using OpenClaw, like, hey, by the way, would you happen to know how to fix this? Yeah. Like, oh, yes. And I'm like, oh.
I'll give it a shot. Hold on. Yeah. It's like, I'll give it a shot. Hold on. And then it's like, you see some things going on. I always monitor the CPUs, you know, when it's doing that. Is it thinking? What's it doing right now? Kind of thing. And then it was like, okay, I got it. And I'm like, what? Like, it works? Okay. Like, it's crazy. The first version that I had that figured it out stabbed itself in the head. I had to redo it a second time. I think it didn't want to work for me anymore because I was always asking it to do way more than it should. You know, I'm like, hey, can you do this and that and this and that and this? And it's like, I'm just going to kill myself. That's basically what it did. And the second version also found the solution for it and was like, okay, here we go. We're off to the races. And I was like, either this thing is really smart, but it's probably because I'm really dumb. That's probably
that's the way it made me feel.
Right on. Hey, what's coming up? What kind of things is you're looking ahead in some things that you're doing? We mentioned robot lawnmowers.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but what else? Anything else?
I always debate on switching my entire home service. You know, I still run Unraid. At some point, I would love to make my entire pool a ZFS pool instead of the Unraid pool, which would take, it's just going to take a lot.
On Unraid.
You can. And that's what I was going to try and do because their ZFS is getting better. Yeah. The problem, Jim, is I picked a really bad time to think about that because even hard drive prices are just through the roof. Yeah, and so for me to be able to shift things off and then back on or create a new. So that's been recently my
If you need some temporary hard drives to just swap it out, you're just going to use them short term. Just call me. I got.
Okay.
I could bring some over. Maybe
I need 90 terabytes. Is the problem?
I don't know if I have that many. I've got a lot.
Well, we might talk.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, to move off and back on and switch everything to ZFS. That's been the thought lately.
I'll spin up. I have a storage server, right? It's kind of got all those hard drives. All the big hard drives are on it. Let me fire that up and see how many. I think it's more like 70. I don't know if I have 90.
Okay.
On that server. I don't know. I have to take a look at it. I'll spin it up and anything else? Anything else coming up?
The robot lawnmower and just a lot of outdoor time. I have just been really loving the outdoors.
Sweet. Well, thanks for saying yes, coming back. Always great to spend time with you. It's old times. I still get some, you know, like when I talk to Aaron, although you were on with Aaron the last time.
Yeah, that was fun.
Last time you were on, you got to stay on. But she always is like, how's Weaker doing whenever I connect with her? She's coming back on here in a couple weeks. Can you stay around as I close this thing up? Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
You okay? Yep. All right. Couple reminders on the way out. Mike's in our Discord group. If you want to join the Discord group, you can do that as well. theaverageguy.tv/Discord. Just jump in there. It's a really nice group. It's not too noisy. Everybody's nice. In fact, Schoonover was at a baseball game tonight. They were playing the Omaha team, our Storm Chasers. Yeah. And it's some tech, it's some deals, it's mostly nice guys. So if you want to jump into the Discord group, theaverageguy.tv/Discord. And then don't forget theaverageguy.tv Discord. Well, that too. No, probably not that. Powered by Maple Grove Partners, get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. Christian was pinging me the other day. I need to get it before he comes on. He is working on a plan to host Bitwarden. And I need to get
that'd be awesome.
You can pay him. It's cloud. It's inexpensive. He's coming on to talk about it here soon. Hold on, I should probably look that up. As we go, he pinged me the other day. He said, "Hey, dude, could you try this?" And I keep like, yeah. And then I haven't got it done. And then I was like, you know, maybe you're going to need to show me what to do on this thing. He's coming on in 3 weeks. I've got to test that before we get it done. But Maple Grove Partners, secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. That's Christian. If you're in need of any hosting services right now, he's the guy to go with. Check it out today. MapleGrovePartners.com. And don't forget, if you could help me out a little bit, I'm trying to get the API opened up on the Amazon affiliate thing, and it just will not let me do it until I get enough click-throughs, or it's mostly sales. So if you're going to buy something anyways, head out to theaverageguy.tv and click on the click-through for the Amazon affiliate link. I'd appreciate that. We'll get that through. I'll let you know when it's done so you can stop doing it. But why would you stop? Just keep doing it. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. I mentioned Erin Lawrence. She's back in 2 weeks. I have work-related conflicts. My job got really busy all of a sudden. So work-related conflicts next week. But we're back with Erin Lawrence, and then Christian joins her the week after that. We'd love to have you come out here. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, like if you're in your car right now and you're listening to the first of all, if you've made it this far, thank you. Mike, you remember when you were podcasting and you would get like, you would just hope,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
People would make it like,
it's the real ones are with us right now.
Right.
The real ones are
still listening. If you're listening this long,
they listen to us babble for that long.
Thank you. Like, thank you. Our live folks, you know, we got a handful, actually we have a pretty good group out there today. I saw Brian, Joe was checking in. I saw Tony a little bit. Uncle Marv was checking in. Bust Out was out there a little bit earlier. Ken was checking in earlier. Thanks for checking in on the live side of things. But if you're a podcast listener and you're listening to the end of this, thank you. I just appreciate you. You do. It's a long time, like in a world of 15-second sound bites and death scrolling. Congratulations. You made it to an hour and some change, maybe 15, maybe 20. That's a miracle. So thank you for hanging out with us tonight. Appreciate you. Live listeners, appreciate you. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Erin Lawrence. Thanks for joining us. With that, we'll say goodbye.
Welcome to Gadget Geeks, where the screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.